If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
All right. Hey, Reg. Getting the microphone set again. How are you doing there, Reggie Roo? Thumbs up. Very good, sir. All right. Well, let's do some podcast action. What do you say? All right. All set in the booth? Oh, the return of the submarine sandwich. Very nice. It's been a while. Have you been eating at a different time or something? Or wow. Okay. All right. Same. I'm not going to mention, but the different brand. Look at you. Is that something new for the new year? Your New Year's resolution to start eating submarine sandwiches from a different place? All right. Get your trigger finger ready in between eating that big sub sandwich there. You ready? All right. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, listening, I would definitely recommend listening to the podcast. Don't get me wrong. I never underestimate the power of listening. But you can't overlook the fact that in today's world, you got to promote yourself or no one's going to promote you. So I could use some help. That means you folks who have seen the light. Get out there. Be a prophet. Be a disciple. Spread the good news. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And of course, if you like what you hear, go to WGNRadio.com. Go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and there you will find podcast after podcast after podcast. After all, we've been doing this since May 24th, 2016. 9 years! There's not that many episodes there, but you can get a good 2 or 3 years worth. So, by all means, if you like what you hear, go back and listen to where we've been so you know where we're going. Right now, we're going to episode number 468. Speaking of podcasts, real quick, I just saw an interesting little note. The Golden Globe Awards, which really, I mean, I don't know. These days, I don't even know if the Academy Awards are all that important. Quick, what won Best Picture? Who won Best Actress? Who won Best Actor? Quick. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It wasn't that long ago. It was like February. It's May. I mean, I don't think we already even remember anymore. But the Golden Globes, this goes to show you just how much Hollywood has now invaded the podcast space. You know, when I started this podcast about 9 years ago, there were not almost, well, more than almost, we're almost at the 9-year mark, May 24th, thank you, Craig, is when the first one was posted. So we're approaching the 9-year mark. And at that time, podcasts were pretty much dominated by either radio people or, you know, a few celebrities, but not even big celebrities. They were just kind of celebrities that were looking to get a foothold somewhere. Maybe they had some name recognition, but they didn't really have a lot going. And in the last 9 years, this entire podcast genre or space, whatever you want to call it, has exploded. And unfortunately, I say unfortunately, just not because, you know, it might impact me. I mean, I don't consider myself competing with Conan O'Brien, but I guess I am in the podcast world. But the fact of the matter is that as the opportunities for celebrities, actors, comedians, you name it, have shrunk. Network television, not as popular, not spending as much money. A lot of reality shows on those networks. Yeah, they're streaming services, but, you know, now you're in competition with everyone else to get a series on. The movie industry, they're making far, far fewer movies, new films, than they used to each year, as the movie business still is reeling from COVID, as well as kind of ruining itself by not staying in tune with their audience and just, I believe, focusing on one aspect, the superhero fantasy era, which, don't get me wrong, has made them a lot of money, but now it seems to have been waning just like everything else. And now they find themselves with no audience because they basically ignored a huge part of the audience for a good 15, 20 years. And now all of a sudden they wonder, well, why aren't people coming to the theater? Well, yes, there's no question that streaming plays a role in that, but you got me out of the habit. You turned your back on me. I'm going to turn my back on you. And that's where Hollywood is. And so both revenue-starved, as well as even more, I think, ego-starved celebrities have found their way into the podcast world. And some of them have done very well and signed multi-million-dollar contracts once again. I mentioned Conan O'Brien, of course, Adam Carolla, Joe Rogan are among the many, but now David Spade and Dana Carvey. There's quite a few, and then there's a few other pure podcast people that I have no idea who they are, and they make millions of dollars as well. Based on what? I have no idea. But my point is, it's become a very crowded, very celebrity-heavy industry now. Celebrities have flocked. Everybody has a pod. Everybody literally has a podcast, it seems. It doesn't it? And if you don't have one, if you're listening to me, then what the heck is your problem? Hey, I've had one for almost 9 years. You know, get on the stick. Come on. It's not that hard, and everyone's doing it, which is, of course, going to lead to overkill, as it always does. But interestingly enough, just because to show you how celebrities have overtaken the podcast market was my original point, the Golden Globe Awards are going to have a new category for podcast, best podcast. And believe me, it's not going to be Hawktua Girl or some unknown kind of niche podcaster. It's going to wind up being, you know, Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and Sean Hayes, or you know, someone like that. It's going to be a major celebrity. You know, it's going to be Michelle Obama or whoever. It's not going to be some unknown, small, hip, unknown podcaster. It's going to be, the Golden Globes are all about big name stars. And so I guarantee you they've added a new category so they can add some even more big celebrities to their audience getting drunk and sitting at the tables. Anyway, just thought I'd pass that along. What I wanted to talk about today actually is something to do with the whole movie and streaming world. In fact, this topic falls into both categories. You see, there's always a method to my madness. You think I'm just making these filibusters and these comments out of the clear blue sky. No. Yeah, sometimes they seem a little off track, but I always bring it back, and I'm doing that right now. What I want to talk about today is a podcast is a Netflix series that I binged on a couple of weeks ago when it first came out, and watched all the episodes, all episodes at one time. Boom. So what, about 4 hours? Boom. Just did it. And enjoyed it very much. And it's interestingly enough, maybe it was the cast and the star power of that, but this show, for at least a week and a half or so, when it debuted, was the number one show on Netflix, and it surprised a lot of people. I was even a little leery of seeing it because the critical review wasn't so great. But clearly, maybe the star power alone at least attracted people initially, so much so that there's even talk about, could there be a season two? I don't think there initially was any talk of that, but certainly now, because of the popularity of it, at least initially out of the box, there is talk of possibly a next season. And the program that I'm talking about is a show called The Four Seasons. Now, those of you are in my age group, you know, over under 100 and over 40. I'm giving myself a real nice gap there. I fall somewhere between 40 and 100. As I always like to joke, I'm in the, when people say, how old are you? I just say, and over. I think I've mentioned that a couple of times here on the podcast, because most of the time now they break down the demographics and then they say, 18 to 34 and 34 to 52, blah, blah, blah. And then 55 and over, they just plunk a 55-year-old with a 107-year-old. Now that if you've lived long in today's world, if you've lived long enough to 55, wow, congratulations to you. And if you're any older than that, then a 55-year-old in today's youth-oriented culture, a 55-year-old and a 100-year-old have a lot in common. But anyway, there was a film in 1981 called The Four Seasons. And it was written and directed by Alan Alda, who was still basking in his MASH fame. MASH was still on. But Alan Alda was always, very ambitious and always doing other side projects as an actor in films, as well as a director and a writer. He wrote many of the MASH episodes. Very talented guy. I really loved Alan Alda when he played a recurring role on The West Wing. I thought he did a great job as a vice presidential candidate, and then later the vice president. I really liked Alan Alda in that. I do like him. I was a fan of MASH at the beginning, but then I lost interest. The show was on way too long. I mean, it was on for 10 years. It really, it was almost like, come on already. The Korean War lasted like 2 or 3 years. It was almost that it was based on. and I really enjoyed the original cast that had McClane Stevenson and Wayne Rogers and Gary Berghoff, as well as Alan Alda and Larry Linville and Loretta Swit were the main characters. And I really felt like after McClane Stevenson left, for me, the show lost a lot of its edge, even though it was only the first couple of years in which McClane Stevenson left. And the show certainly went on for more than a decade without him. But for me, that was the show, at the beginning, was really the essence of what the show was all about, based on, of course, the film MASH by Robert Altman. And it had an irreverence and a silliness, as well as a seriousness, and it tried to retain some of that same frenzied, manic, as well as scared and serious tone about all this mayhem going on during a war, and in the setting of doctors who really see the realities of war
with young men, and especially at that time was men, but in today's world, you know, young soldiers coming in with, you know, with just horrible injuries, and they have to, you know, fix them up in surgery and things like that, and see a lot of death. And that's, you know, we don't see that on the news. We see the bombs, but we don't see a lot of the collateral damage of that. And so I thought originally when MASH first started, I thought it was a very very entertaining, funny, but as well as very poignant and dramatic show at times. And I just felt as it went on, it got a little too preachy. The humor wasn't as biting or satirical, but hey, it was on. It was one of the, I mean, its finale remains one of the most watched shows in the history of television. In fact, a little interesting side note: when I was about 11 years old, in the Sun Times, I told you I've been reading the newspaper since I was a little kid. In the Sun Times, they used to have a TV column written by a columnist named Bill Granger. And there was one column that he wrote, and he said, you know, I'm a TV columnist and a critic, and I'm you know, reviewing shows and telling you if a show is good or bad or not. And he's like, you know, being very self-deprecating and saying, but, you know, who am I? And he said, I'm wondering what the young people of the world think what television shows are they watching, or what do they think of television? What are their reviews of some of the big TV shows on television right now? And so I was 11 years old, and I read this column, and I'm like, oh, okay, I've got opinions, right? And so I wrote in a letter, and I did it about MASH. And he said, and I'll print some of the ones that I think, you know, are, you know, show a little interesting opinion and give an idea of where the really young people are today, not even teenagers, younger than that, where they are in terms of what's going on in television. So I sat down at my typewriter. My mom bought me a typewriter when I was in, or not bought me one, but sat me down in front of one when I was in second grade. First grade, I was typing out. Oh, I think second grade. I was typing out like a lot of my papers that I would turn in. I didn't know how to type the correct way, but I used to type. And so I've been kind of writing literally my whole life. And so I sat down and I wrote this letter and I sent it in. And I didn't really think too much of it. I'm assuming he's going to get a million letters. And one day my dad came home from work and he had the newspaper, the Sun Times. And he said, we used to get both papers. And he said, he came home and he said, and I didn't see the paper every day at that. I used to wait for him to bring it home. That's when I would read it later in the day. I didn't see it at the beginning of the day. I was in school, things like that. And he said, did you write a letter to the Sun Times? And I said, yeah. Why? He said, well, they printed it. And so he shows me the thing. He was at work, and I don't know if someone else saw it, and they saw the name, and they said, hey, is this your son? And I didn't tell my mom or dad because I just did it on my own and sent it in. I didn't think anyone was going to print it or read it even. And there it was, and I still have a copy of it. I still have a copy of it, and from the original newspaper. And talk about, I mean, I even at 11, I had a definite opinion. Now, you can question how correct my opinion was. Because my opinion was about the show MASH. And I said, I can still remember it. The popular television show MASH is losing its popularity. McLean Stevenson left, and so did the show. Okay, now that's an 11-year-old. I mean, man, I'm not pulling any punches there. You know, this is serious stuff here. I told you, I've been watching TV since I can remember. So by the time I was 11, I already had a critical eye here. I mean, I think I was destined to do whatever I do. I don't even know what that is anymore. But yeah, no, I had a definite opinion there. 11-year-old. The popular show MASH has lost its popularity. McLean Stevenson left, and so did the show. Sharp, punchy, attitude, opinion, catch your eye. Go after the big guys and poke holes in them, right? I mean, it was all there, and that's why they printed it, I would assume. Well, of course, the show went on to go on to be one of the biggest hits in television history. It did not leave after the first couple of seasons, as I so eloquently predicted. Oops. But at least I wasn't afraid to share my opinion. I haven't been all these decades later, which is why I think you're listening right now. But anyway, Alan Alda wrote, directed, and starred in this film called The Four Seasons. And it co-starred Carol Burnett and Rita Moreno, Jack Weston, a very popular character actor in the 50s and 60s and 70s. He was in a lot of Twilight Zone episodes, kind of a chunky round guy with a round face, kind of a lisp. But he was a very popular character actor in movies and in early television. A lot of Twilight Zones. What else was Jack Weston in? I'm trying to think what you would really remember him in. If you do remember the Twilight Zone episode, if you remember the one called "The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street," Jack Weston is one of the neighbors there. I think his name is Charlie. He's the one that gets shot. He doesn't get killed, but he's one of the main rabble rousers. And when they think there's a monster from outer space coming to their block, but he was on several of those episodes. Also, he plays a cool. Have you ever seen the film called The Cincinnati Kid with Steve McQueen and Edward G. Robinson about seven-card stud? Really a great film. If you have never seen The Cincinnati Kid, watch that movie. Cool, cool movie. Edward G. Robinson, Steve McQueen, Anne Margaret, Carl Malden, Joan Blondell, Cab Calloway, Jack Weston. I think he played a really slimy character called Pig. Anyway, he was a very very good and very popular funny guy, too. Character actor. And then Sandy Dennis, Oscar winner for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Young woman named Bess Armstrong, who was popular in the 80s and 90s as an actress. And then one actor who at the time wasn't as well known in films or so. He was more famous on the stage. His name was Len Carew. Now, people may know him today, much older, if you ever watched the show Blue Bloods. He plays, I think, Henry Reagan on that show. But he plays one of the people in the film as well. And what it's basically about is three couples, longtime friends, middle-aged, upper middle class. They've got some money. I think Jack Weston's guy is a dentist, and Len Carew's character is a salesman. I can't remember what Alan Alda's character does. But so Alan Alda is married to Carol Burnett, and Rita Moreno is married to Jack Weston, and Len Carew is married to Sandy Dennis. And these three couples, it's called The Four Seasons because the movie shows the four couples going on a vacation together during each season of the year. So we see four different vacations that they always vacation together. So there's spring and summer and winter and fall. And actually it begins, I believe, with spring, summer, fall, and winter. It ends with the winter. That's the way it goes. And it shows them in different locations. In the winter, they go to a cabin. In the fall, they go to their kid's college, kind of a leaf-blown, Ivy League-looking kind of college. They go to an island and, different things like that. And it really was a fun film. I enjoyed it from the first time I saw it. I saw it way back when it first came out. And I've always enjoyed watching it whenever it's come back on television. I don't even know. I think it might be available now to stream just because of the popularity of the television show that just premiered a few weeks ago on Netflix, also called The Four Seasons. But what's interesting about it is it shows these three couples who have known each other for, you know, since college time for 20, 35, 30 years. And they vacation together. And, you know, all the fun aspects as well as all the dramas and the pitfalls of a long-term relationship. As much as you love these friends of yours, they still get on your nerves. You know, all those things that just show all the different aspects of a long-term friendship and the trials and the tribulations, the fun times and the difficult times. And then, of course, there's got to be some conflict. And then what happens is the Len Carew character sort of puts a shockwave into this group that's known each other for 30 or 40 years, vacations together, you know, spends holidays, all the whole thing. He is probably at that time, probably in his mid-40s, maybe even early 50s, and he decides to divorce his wife. And then he gets together with a young woman, much younger woman, probably in her late 20s or early 30s. And so that certainly then causes a major rift in the group itself. Not only did he break up the group itself, the six of them who have known each other and shared their lives and kids and weddings and you name it. Now suddenly one of their good friends is out of the group. And so now the question is, like it happens in many times with divorce, you know, what happens to the friends? And so they have to balance that. The friends try to keep in touch with the wife, and yet now that he's got a new girlfriend, he invites the young girl on their trips, which ruffles some feathers. The group is still mad at him for divorcing the wife to begin with, even though he says, look, I've been miserable for 20 years, but, you know, it's just the shock of it. Then, of course, he comes with this young woman. She threatens the older women. The men in the group are certainly now jealous that their friend is with this beautiful young woman. So a lot of dynamics go on, and it's just a very interesting, fun, insightful, and poignant at times. A view of friendships, and as I said before, how friendships should, I've always felt that friendships should be effortless and also needing lots of effort. And as contradictory as that sounds, that's what really friendship is, especially if you had any kind of long time friendship, 20, 30, 40 years. Maybe even more. My dad had some of the same group of friends for almost 60 years. You know, and I remember my mom and dad coming home from out, you know, different outings with their friends and coming home and they're, oh, did you see blah, 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 did you hear blah, 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 you know. But yet they would go out the next month with them. And then I learned the same thing as I got my set of friends and we got married and we hang around and you go places, you realize, you know, everybody, and I'm sure people are talking about me. And I mean, who knows? But it was a really, to me, funny, but also poignant and insightful look at friendship and all the different phases they go through and all the different emotions that get caught up into a friendship, especially one, as I said, friendships that lasts for 20 or 30 years, you really come to know these people in good times and in bad. And many times, you know, you really do find out, it's not a cliche, the longer you live and the longer you go through a friendship, you really realize that you really do find out who your real friends are. And especially in times of trouble, you find out who your real friends are, even sometimes your family members too. So So I've always enjoyed the movie. As I said, it was funny. It was silly at times, but also very poignant and very dramatic and very insightful. And Alan Alda, I think, did a great job. In fact, it was nominated for 3 Golden Globes. So it wasn't just like, oh, you know, this is some TV movie. No, no. It had some, you know, for the time, some really good star power. No question. Carol Burnett, Alan Alda, Rita Moreno, Jack Weston, Sandy Dennis. I mean, these are all very established and award-winning actors and actresses at the time. And so I think if you were of a certain age, you remember that film. And as I said, even as when it came out, I was very young. But I watched it and I found it kind of interesting. Not only did I I've always sort of looked at things in a bigger picture, and I understood all the, even as a young person, I could see some of my friendships, even at a younger age, kind of mirroring some of these things. But I also watched it and said, wow, that would be cool as somebody, you know, as a late teen, early 20s, probably when that movie came out. No, probably a teenager. I'm like, wow, that would be so cool to have a group of friends that go on vacations all the time with each other and go to cool places. And you're always with that group and you feel comfortable and you go to cool places. And I always hoped to do that. And I've done that to some extent, but not as much as these folks did. Now, at the same time, you always wonder when you watch the movie, is that a really good idea to be around people that much? Who knows? But I always looked at that and said, well, that would be so cool to travel with friends, to have this little cool, close-knit group of friends and travel with them. And as I said, I've done that to some extent, but not to the degree that these people did over many decades. And so I always enjoyed the film. And I think it's been mostly forgotten. Didn't win any Academy Awards. It didn't win the Golden Globes. It did okay at the box office. It was not a huge hit. And it sort of came and went, and every so often you'd, you know, during the 80s and 90s and even in the 2000s, early 2000s, you know, you'd see it on A&E or some of these TV, you know, where they'd show some movies, kind of a Lifetime thing, because it had that kind of feel to it. And, you know, it had some popularity, but not enough where it was one of the defining films of the 80s. It's not talked about in the same way that they talk about, you know, The Breakfast Club or, you know, movies like that from that era. But I always enjoyed it, saw it at the theater, and every time it was on television on cable throughout the last several years, I'd always watch it. Now, of course, I haven't seen it in many years. So I'm actually going to look it up to see if it is on any of the streaming services. I hope it is, because I'd really like to see it again. And it's not surprising that that someone like Tina Fey would have remembered that film and maybe decided to do her own version of it, updating it, and bringing it to a new audience and bringing it into today's world. I mean, now it's been almost 44 years since that movie came out. And while, once again, when you know a film is really good, when it taps into real human feelings and human emotions, and that's what this film did. As I said, why do you think that they still do Shakespeare plays? Because, yes, the language is difficult to understand. It was written 500 years ago. And a lot of the plays deal with kings and queens and things like this. But the reason that Shakespeare plays still remain popular, the reason why Denzel Washington and Jake Gyllenhaal could charge $900 a seat to see Othello in 2025, is because as much as some of the aspects of the show may be dated, when it's set, the language that it uses, that certainly is dated. But Shakespeare plays were rooted in human emotion, in human drama, in human frailty. in human comedy. And the fact of the matter is, while we have, as I've said this many times, even though we've advanced tremendously from a technological world or standpoint, from human existence and human beings and human behavior, we haven't changed all that much. We like to think we have, but in how we treat each other, how we deal with ourselves and each other, that's why Shakespeare plays are still relevant. Shakespeare plays were about love and jealousy and ambition and war and greed and silliness and bad decisions. And they are as relevant, the actual core of those shows, the plot lines and the action that takes place, still relevant today. I'm not sure if that's good or bad. But anyway, my point is that I'm not surprised that someone like Tina Fey remembered that film and said, you know, I wonder how that would work in 2025. It's been more than 45 years. Some things have changed, but yet some things have not, just like Shakespeare. And so Tina Fey, who certainly has a little clout in Hollywood, put together a film called The Four Seasons. Same basic premise, group of six friends, four vacations in four different locations, three couples whose lives go back 20, 30 years, back to their college days, firmly in intertwined with family things and professional things and close friends. Now, of course, as I said, it's 2025. So she wisely updates it for today's world. And so unlike the Four Seasons film in 1981, the Tina Fey 2025 version still has the three couples, still has the six people, but in today, one of the couples is gay, as well as multiracial. So a little twist, more reflecting today's world. In addition, and I'm not going to give it away in case you want to watch it, but there's a very serious shift in the plot line, which does not take place in the film. That does take place here. So while she bases it on this, and there's some dialogue I completely remember, there's some scenes that are almost identical as well. And then but at the same time, this new version of The Four Seasons certainly has its own identity, has its own sense of humor. It certainly takes its influence from the spirit and the overall concept that was originally performed and portrayed by Alan Alda as a director and the writer and one of the stars. But it also has its own voice. It has its own plot line. It's not like just a complete retread. It certainly borrows the constructs of the spring and the summer and the winter, the fall and the winter. That's thus the four seasons. In this case, it's two episodes for each season, so it's able to expand a little more. The film obviously was an hour and a half, 2 hours long. This is 4 hours long with the eight episodes. And so, but I thought it was very entertaining. I thought it had a certain point of view. I liked that it had its own voice, but it still paid homage to the original. In fact, in a nice little touch, even though he's kind of struggling health-wise, Alan Alda even makes a small cameo. I think he's in his mid to late 80s at this point. I think he's got Parkinson's disease, and you could sort of tell. But at the same time, he delivers his lines very well. He's in the moment, and he does a great job. And you could see that he's really excited to be a part of this, because I think he really I've read interviews, and he's always spoken very fondly of this film. And so I think he was just personally touched that 45 years later or so, that this show, his concept is being brought into, into a new life. And so you can almost tell when you see him in this short cameo, but you can see he's just so excited to be a part of this. It's genuine. You can't hide that. Like the original film, the television series that's on Netflix, showing now, you can go on and look at it, also has a good, kind of star-heavy cast. Not as much, or not as star-heavy, I would say, as the original film did for its time, but certainly people that you would know, obviously Tina Fey, who produced it and wrote several of the episodes, is one of the main stars. She plays the Carol Burnett role in this, which is one of the lead roles, although it really isn't a lead role. It's really spread out amongst all the main people. But so Tina Fey and Will Forte play the Alan Alda kind of couple. And then Steve Carell and Carrie Kenny Silver play the Len Carew and Sandy Dennis couple, the one that gets divorced. And then the gay couple is Coleman Domingo and Marco Calvani, and they play the gay character with the gay couple, which in the film would have been played by Jack Weston and Rita Moreno. So it's a completely different kind of take on that relationship. So really, the one that really is most like the film is the Will Forte and Tina Fey couple. And even that one is not the same as it was portrayed in the film. So it takes the influence and the spirit of the original film, but then it goes off on its own. So we've got Steve Carell and Tina Fey and Will Forte. Those certainly are very well-known names. Will Forte from Saturday Night Live, who was probably on with Tina Fey, and then, of course, Steve Carell. And they all, it's a very good ensemble cast. They do a good job of as I said, recreating that camaraderie as well as the tension that can happen within a group of friends. And we all have to admit it, right? That's just there. As much as you like or even love these dear friends of yours, especially over a long period of time, you know that there's parts of them that drive you crazy. And that's what's so cool about this, is that we get to see both sides. We get to see them interact with each other and have fun. We get to see them interact with each other and also give each other zingers and call them out on their behavior, because they've known each other so long that they feel comfortable enough to do that. They've known these people long enough that I remember you in college, okay? So I go that far back with you, so you can't put any BS over on me. I know you too well. And they call people out on that behavior. And then, of course, which is even more fun, you get to see when the couples go off on their own and they talk about the other couple, as well as they wind up having some of their own problems amongst each couple within their relationships. But then we also hear them kind of gossipy or as I said, just kind of talking things out. Oh, did you hear what Whatchamacallit said? And so it makes the drama and the comedy and the satire of it, and sometimes even a parody, very real. And as I said, my wife and I, we watch this in one sitting, 4 hours. We both loved the film when it came out, and so we were certainly invested in this from the beginning. And I have to say that I thought they did a really good job. I didn't expect it to be the number one show on Netflix. And so now, I mean, the Four Seasons came out. The film came out in 1981. It did okay. As I said, it got three Golden Globe nominations. It wasn't a huge hit at the box office, but it did well enough that, some people may remember it. But now, because it did so well, the number one show on Netflix, believe me, when that happens, people pay attention. And so when you have the number one show on Netflix, even if it's for 2 weeks or a week, that doesn't matter. Like I said, it wasn't a bona fide, like critical, like every critic loving it, far from it. But it's done well enough that, that now there's talk of it expanding. And it certainly has the capability to go on the way it ends, just like the way the film ends. These friendships have gone through trials and tribulations, but they have done that in the past, and they found a way to stay together. And even though they are confronted with some major questions about their own relationships, as well as the relationship between each other. As I said, this wild card of a younger woman brought into the group and one of their older friends kind of being estranged from the group while they're still trying to be friends with her. It's a very awkward situation for everybody. And they're mad at the Steve Carell character. Why did you do this? Why did you break up our group? And just like Len Carew in the film, he says, I wasn't happy for 20 years. So it's very difficult. You want to see your friend happy, but at the same time, you don't want to see your other friend miserable, and you don't want to break up that little group that you had, So there's a lot of conflicting and tension, tension surrounding this, even though at the core of it, there's a friendship that they all share and they don't want to lose. And it's a love as well. And so it's an interesting aspect. But like I said, the film sort of ends where you know that these people have been through the ups and downs, but they're going to go somewhere next year. And that's sort of how the show ends as well. They've been through ups and downs over the last year, but there's no reason to think that their friendships are over. They're going to work. They're either working or going to work through them somehow. And so as of right now, the jury is still out of whether there'll be a season two. But I would have to bet that just because, once again, of the people involved, especially Tina Fey, Netflix wants to have Tina Fey in their stable. So this show certainly did well enough that I think that there's probably a really good chance that there will be a season, at least one more season of the film. But as I said, the film itself is still, I hope it gets a little bit of a revival, because it really does seem to be something where, as I said, people remember it. As I said, now I'm just looking on, I was wondering in my mind, what kind of a film, how did it do? And not only, I guess, as I said, I was saying, it didn't light the world of light on fire, but it certainly did. I'm looking at this now. Four Seasons was both a critical and box office success. It made $50 million. It was the ninth highest grossing film of 1981. Wow. Okay. That's more than I thought. I didn't think it was that big of a hit. It was kind of skewed to an older group, older audience because of that. And I'm sure that this show is same way. But I actually think that, as I said, as a teenager, I watched this film of older people, and I said to, relatively older, at that time they were in 30s or probably, early 40s, mid 40s, maybe 50s. So still, 30, 40 years older, but I'm watching that and I'm saying, well, wouldn't that be cool to have this group of friends that travel everywhere and you have this great tight-knit group of things, and you go to these different places and have these different experiences. And so I would think that even though, yes, the age group of these couples reflect the way the original film was, you know, late 40s, early 50s, if you know, mid 50s, things like that. At the same time, I would think that a younger, you know, the concept here and the emotions that are involved, these are things that go on in every friendship. And so this is not just some old person's show. So I would encourage young people to see this as well, because you can either see yourself in these couples now, or they might be a nice little bellwether as to what possibly can happen. And maybe it could be a cautionary tale. Or maybe you watch it like I did as a young person and go, wow, you know, it'd be kind of neat to get a group together and sort of do things on a regular basis, you know, vacation, or at least maybe we get together every month and have a specific thing to do something together. Like I said, that's what my parents did. For most of my childhood, as well as into my adulthood, almost until, you know, health concerns, you know, just kind of caused the group to break apart. But my parents, like this group of friends that they had, and there was probably, once again, four or five couples, maybe even more than that. Most of those couples were connected by the men in the group. They were friends, and they were friends from not even teenagers, but earlier than that. So my point is that they literally were friends for 60 years. And when they got married, their friendships didn't fade away. They got together every month and went somewhere. Now, initially, I remember being a little kid, and they were always going to some event. You know, this is many years ago. They would go to a play, or they would go to a nightclub, or they would go, you know, dancing, or they would go somewhere and do some activity. Then as they got older and things like that, then suddenly, okay, they would be hosting it at different people's homes. And then, as I said, as time went on, people's health and things like that, although for the most part, they stayed healthy for many years. And that group did not break up really until, I would say, until maybe they were in their 70s when finally people were getting a little sick and slowing down and things like that. But they got together every month, pretty much. So I remember watching that film and then watching this go on with my parents as well. It wasn't the same thing. They didn't go on vacations four times a year, but they saw each other 12 times a year. I mean, that's to remain friends and to then continue that friendship. As I said, they went out once a month. So they saw each other at least, and I don't, maybe around Christmas time they didn't, just because of things like that. But my point is that they were seeing each other, you know, 10, 11 months out of the year. Maybe they even did do it, you know, 12 months. That's 12 times a year. Do you see your friends? I don't know. Do you see your friends 12 times a year? Depends on how old you are. I mean, obviously, if you're in your 20s, you see your friends every weekend. But as you get older, I mean, do you see your friends once a month? Get together like that? So between watching my parents do this, and I mean, and I have to give them credit, that was like a big thing. It was like, you know, okay, look, they I think they used to plan out the thing. So it's like, hey, this is club night. You're going to go and do other things. You got birthday parties. I think they used to spread it out over the year. Like, okay, well, my daughter's birthday is here, you know, this, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, hey, no, you have to go to club. It was very important to them. I don't know if friendships are like that anymore, especially in today's world. Everybody's running around. But so I saw this in real life, with my parents, having this close-knit group that got together all the time. And then I see this film as a teenager with, once again, a close-knit group of friends getting together on a regular basis. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool, you know. So I might have a soft spot for this film because I could relate to it in my own life. But really, I think that based on the fact that it did well and it was nominated for awards, and now it's been revisited and updated and had some really good audience numbers as well as some critical praise as well, I think that it tapped into a very basic topic of friendship, the good, the bad, and the ugly of friendship. And it was very honest and genuine. And the original film was, and so is this television show. So much so that that's why I wanted to tell you about it. Because, it's something that that a lot of people might not have. If you didn't hear about the movie, the original movie, if it was off your radar screen or you're a little younger, you never heard of it, I'd like to put that on your radar screen. But this is also something as you're clicking around and, on a Friday or Saturday night and you're looking for something to watch on the streaming service and there's so much stuff there to pick from and you might see this Four Seasons and go, well, what the heck is that? Well, maybe this will help you stop on it. And if the Four Seasons film is available on a streaming service too, I would encourage you to see that as well. So check it out. I enjoyed it. I thought the acting was great. The writing was good. Some nice twists. As I said before, an homage, if you will, to the movie, but it also had its own kind of point of view, its own kind of humor, and its own plot line. It's not just a remake scene for scene. It goes off on its own kind of road as well, which I give Tina Fey credit for doing that too. And you get a chance to see Alan Alda doing a pretty nice job given whatever kind of situation that he is dealing with. So check it out right now on Netflix, The Four Seasons. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 468. I'm Jim Toronto. I am here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.